So, Ian, why don't you tell us how you got interested in making jewelry?
Well, basically, I've just always loved fossils and meteorites. I've always, you know, from when I was a kid, I've always collected them and, you know, been intrigued by them. And it went from just collecting them and, you know, enjoying them to I just kind of came across the idea of making something, you know, wearable and giving them more value. You know, not only can you look at them, generally they get stuck in a box or a packet and shoved away in a drawer, whereas with, you know, with my stuff, you can take a fossil or whatever and you can wear it and you can enjoy it and people can see it. So that was always the idea, really, and it's, you know, it works and it's grown.
Now, how did you become interested in making prehistoric themed jewelry and meteorite jewelry?
Well, with the meteorite stuff, the main reason I started making it because in the UK there wasn't anybody else doing it, and there still isn't really, because in the UK people aren't quite as aware as you are in the USA with all your, you know, you've got meteor craters and everything huge and, you know, visible. You've got craters to visit and everyone, you know, there's a much bigger, I've always followed the meteorite community for quite a lot of years, and it's, you know, it's all based in the USA. You know, there's all the dealers go through the USA, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do something in the UK, because it was just different, and, you know, people didn't realize, I didn't realize for years, that you could actually buy a meteorite. I mean, I bought a tiny one years ago for like £2 or something, and, you know, I thought, well, this is, you know, I could be onto something here, because everyone.
I would have thought Russia because of the landmass.
What do you mean, Russia?
Like the place to find like all the, like the most of the meteors, just because of its sheer size.
Well, I mean, it's the sheer size is there, but the thing, I mean, the sheer bulk of them are found in the deserts of North Africa because they're collected in the sand because they just fall. You know, nearly all the stone ones, particularly that are found, are scattered over the deserts of, you know, the Sahara and whatever, and then, you know, North Africa, because they don't, nothing happens to them. They don't weather. You know, they don't get rained on. They don't rust. So they're often collected up by the nomads. You know, the Berbers there collect them up, and then the dealers go over and sort of speak to them and haggle with them. And then they, you know, the most of the deals are actually done in the tents, you know, by the nomads. And that's actually where the bulk of them are found, because they're easy to spot.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that totally makes sense. Now, do you go meteorite hunting yourself? No.
I mean, that's the thing that everyone always asks. They always ask, you know, well, the fossils, do you collect everything yourself? And the answer is no, simply because I just, you know, it's just not cost effective. I mean, with the fossils, they come from South America, you know, lots come from Morocco, like, you know, all over the world. And it's just, unfortunately, it's not, much as I'd love to go to these places, it's not cost effective. I mean, I do some, you know, collect some fossils in the UK, but the bulk of them are, you know, they come through dealers and things from all around the world.
Now, how are meteorites easy to spot until, you know, how are they easy to differentiate between earth rocks?
I mean, in a sense, most of the bulk of them are stone ones, which are kind of originally part of the asteroid belt. And if you actually see them, they're quite simple. Kind of, they all look kind of the same, and they almost don't have that many characteristics. I mean, they're brown and they tend to be weathered, so they're actually easy to spot because they don't look, you know, they don't have all sorts of different strange lumps and other colored, you know, pieces in them. And I mean, they're all tested anyway. I mean, you know, the bulk of them, or the more valuable ones, they'll all go through labs and they're all tested and given numbers, and, you know, they have to be classified. It's not just a matter of that's, you know, somebody saying it's a meteorite because, you know, they think it is. To sell them, you know, in any number, they all have to be tested and numbered. The number goes off where they were found and how many has been found in that place. So you can identify them where they're found from the actual number they're given.
Now, do you find that the jewelry, the look of the jewelry, is kind of dictated by, like, the meteorite, like when you're making the meteorite jewelry?
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, I suppose. I mean, the type of them dictates, you know, what you can do with them. And the bulk of what the work that I do is silver jewelry. And then the meteorite's embedded into the actual silver itself. And you can only, I mean, with those, you can only use iron meteorites with those, because in the technique I use, a stone one would just be destroyed when you actually fire the silver. So, the jewelry that I use, it is dictated by the, the meteorite type. I mean, I use all different types. I use moon dust, Mars dust, which is, from meteorites that have fallen, knocked off of those planets and then come and landed on Earth. And then, so I use those, and then I use stone ones, iron ones, all different types. I mean, there's moldavite, which is a gorgeous green, glassy substance that was created by a meteorite impact. It's not an actual meteorite itself. It's kind of a glass that's created from a huge impact in Eastern Europe. So there's all sorts of different types.
Nice. Now, as far as the fossil jewelry, what I've seen on your website, like by far my favorite has always been amber. Mm-hmm. How easy is that to work with, and how easy is it to find?
It's relatively easy to find. The vast bulk of it's collected in the Baltic, the region. I mean, that's just where it's always been found in great numbers, and it's been cut out of there and carved there. There's amber mines and things. There's been amber mines for a long time there, so it's not that difficult to find. I mean, I don't actually cut the pieces; they're all polished. The actual pieces of amber are generally cut and polished over there, and then they're shipped around, and then you can buy what you need. I mean, at the moment I'm making quite a few sets of cufflinks that have got amber and with insects in and things. You just get you find the material that suits what you need. It's not always easy because it's rare material. That's I spend half my life kind of emailing people and going, have you got this? It's not, these are not common materials, but that's the fun of it, really, is finding what you want and making something beautiful with it.
Yeah, exactly. And and that was going to be my next question. I mean, how rare is it to find, a piece of amber with a fossil in it?
It's rare to find. Well, it's very difficult to find amber with any decent size fossils in it. I mean, that the price tends to be dictated by the size and the clarity of the insects. I mean, everyone always wants huge flies and insects and whatever in it. The problem is, if you want a huge genuine, a large genuine insect within it, it shoots the price up because more people, everybody wants something that's very visible. You can get pieces of amber with lizards, I've seen pieces of tiny little lizards and things in, and, larger scorpions and things. You can get them, but then for those pieces, you're talking thousands of, pounds stroke dollars or whatever. So, it's all a matter of what people can afford. But there's all sorts, there's tons. I mean, some amber has leaves and, parts of trees and plants in. There's, it depends what you want. It's a fascinating material.
It is. And one thing I was going to ask you about that is, do you think that maybe the interest in that has gone up because of things if you remember the first Jurassic Park movie, that's where they got the DNA from the dinosaurs and everything.
As dubious as the whole film, the premise of the film is. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I quite often do shows, shows where I put all the jewelry out and then kids come and have a look. I mean, kids are always intrigued by it, obviously, and they can't generally afford it. That's the thing. I mean, the kids always just think, right, I want that, that, and that. And then the parents say, right, you can have you can have a fossil sort of thing, because kids don't really need jewelry, but they're fascinated by the whole, the whole idea of it. So yeah, I mean, Jurassic Park's been great, and it's still, it carries on intriguing people because they're great films for a start. And
Just don't use them in science class.
Yeah, there's a few holes there.
Yeah, exactly. Now, exactly with what is amber? Is it really tree sap that's been fossilized?
Yeah, it's basically the kind of juice or resin that's, it doesn't come out of certain, you still see it nowadays sometimes in trees when the bark gets cut, or some trees you'll see a kind of lines of drips of resin come out of the trees, and then it's just certain trees will have, large amounts of it. And then as it's, as it's run down the trees or whatever, and then it just collects, these are quite proliferous forests and things, and rainforests. And there were, there were in the right places, there were a lot of bugs that it could pick up, within as it's dripping down the tree. And then it's, it just hardens, and just the nature of it, nothing really attacks it or damages it. I mean, it doesn't get damaged by the weather, and it's just, it's just remained basically the same state it's, it started in. That's the magic of it.
Yeah, and I've never seen a piece of amber that wasn't beautiful, I don't think. So, but you know what? I was really amazed with when I went to your site yesterday. I remember when I was a kid, you know, and we'd have science, you know, and we had science class. I mean, we would touch on paleontology. And, but I always loved these creatures, the trilobites.
Trilobites are amazing. I mean, they're a hell of a successful creature. I mean, they were around for 350 million years, and just hundreds and hundreds of different types, you know, compared to the amount of time, you know, man has been around. I mean, that's an incredible amount of time. And, you know, just the sheer variety of them is incredible. I mean, some people just collect trilobites. They can spend their whole life just collecting different types. There's so many different types. I mean, I've got tiny, tiny little ones that are kind of two or three millimeters across with no eyes. And then I've got another one that's a foot across on a big slab from Morocco. You know, there's just, you know, the variety of trilobites is incredible. You know, you've got Russian ones with, you know, thousands or, you know, lots of spines all over them that have to be carved out and cost a lot of money, or just simpler ones. I mean, you've got quite a lot in the USA. You've got a lot of Cambrian ones from Utah and wherever. There's, you know, there's a lot in the USA for a start.
I know. They're such a significant, you know, they're such a significant piece of our evolution.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously the development of the eye and whatever. Yeah, I mean, they're an important creature.
Mm-hmm. Now, because they're so varied and everything, what can you make out of a trilobite?
Well, I mean, I don't tend to use too many, you know, most of the ones need to be a kind of, you know, fairly standard size and shape, obviously, to be, you know, to be set into jewelry. I wouldn't, you know, you don't want anything huge. I mean, I tend to use the USA, the Arathi, which are the small sort of dark gray US ones, because they're easy to set. I mean, cufflinks, I do all sorts of cufflinks, necklaces, you know, and do brooches and things with them, you know, fairly small things. I mean, everyone recognizes them. I think with trilobites, everybody recognizes a trilobite. You know, along with dinosaurs and things, they're, everyone knows them. So they're a good one to use. Everyone loves a trilobite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They're instantly recognizable, too.
Yeah.
So, now what about ammonite? You've got some really good ammonite pieces here as well.
Oh, ammonites are great. I mean, they're the same, I suppose, really. I mean, everyone knows an ammonite, you know, especially in the UK. I mean, they're probably the one fossil that pretty much everybody's collected off the beach somewhere. You know, they're a common fossil. So, especially in the UK, there's plenty. There's not actually that as many in the USA, I don't think, to be found. You know,
not really.
Everyone knows them, but again, the variety of them is incredible. I mean, the colors, especially Madagascan ones, I mean, when they're cut and sliced, they have the most amazing, every single one is slightly different. You know, when they're cut, you can see what all the different chambers and different colors of crystal and all sorts of, you know, the variety with them. Every single one is a bit different. And again, there's, you know, loads of them. Everyone loves them, and they're easy to make into jewelry as well. I mean, they make all sorts of things. I mean, cufflinks are the best with ammonites, because I make loads of cufflinks, especially wedding cufflinks and things, because, you know, every single pair is slightly different.
Or earrings and necklaces. I mean, they seem almost tailored,
yeah,
you know, universally to be jewelry.
Yeah, whatever size you want. I mean, whatever size of jewelry you want, there'll be an ammonite for it. I mean, I've got boxes and boxes of different sizes and colors, and, you know, you can pretty much match up anything. I mean, you know, and the fact they come sliced in pairs, I mean, that makes them ideal for, you know, all sorts of earrings and whatever, and cufflinks. So they are great. And just as a single, you know, as a centerpiece for a necklace, they're great too. You know, as long as they don't run out, it'll be fine.
Now I got to ask you, what is your most unusual piece that you've ever made?
Oh, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, there's a spaceman necklace I do. I suppose that's one of my special ones, because she's, you know, it's a really elaborate one that's set with meteorites and colored enamels and things. Yeah, that's quite special. And the spaceman itself is one that's the spaceman, it's the basic spaceman necklace I invented years ago. And that's, you know, it's evolved into different forms, but it's a kind of classic little spaceman, you know, with a visor and, you know, the meteorite in his center. And that's evolved into rings and earrings and all sorts. It's a kind of classic of mine. So.
I've seen that on your site. I mean, every time I see it, I think Anunnaki.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you know the tale of the Anunnaki. I don't know if it's true or if the Anunnaki is true or not, but that's what it reminds me of, is the ancient symbol of the Anunnaki.
I'm not familiar with it, but I'll look it up.
They're basically ancient astronauts that, you know, it's a theory, but I don't know. I think it's a History Channel, let's make a show type thing, but it's basically ancient astronauts that came to Egypt to help us out because we were too.
Yeah, I know the one. Yeah.
Because we couldn't, you know, we needed our diapers changed or whatever, you know.
Maybe we do.
No. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if we're going to annihilate ourselves. I mean, there's what 7 billion of us now.
You know, we do a pretty good job on our own, so yeah, shouldn't take long.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what is the hardest piece that you've ever had to make?
Oh God, I don't know really. I mean, I mean, in a sense, I wouldn't take on anything that I couldn't do. So I suppose I've never made anything that's, you know, completely stumped me. I mean, the thing is, I've kind of learned the skills that I've learned. I've never had any actual jewelry training, so I've just made it up as I went along and learned. It's so easy nowadays to teach yourself the skills to do basically anything. I mean, you know, a traditional training is nice, but actually you don't need it. I mean, you know, there's the magic of YouTube. There's any little technique you might want to practice, if you find it, will be on YouTube. Somebody will have made a tutorial. So I've just, you know, learned skills, and there's still loads and loads of skills that I haven't got, or I haven't got the time to learn just yet. And you know, it just evolves over time. It's quite an organic thing, I think, nowadays. You don't have to have a large, you know, formulate training. You can just, you know, you can just make it up as you go along. So I wouldn't take on something I didn't have the skills for. I mean, sometimes people have, you know, requested really intricate, you know, set diamond rings, things like that. I don't, you know, that's not really my thing. I'm not going to lie to them and say I can, you know, set the finest diamonds. It's, you know, I'm not there to make a sort of traditional diamond ring. There's plenty of other people that will do that. So, I like to make something different. You know, that's what I do. So.
Exactly. Now, which do you find, let me rephrase that. Is it different to work with silver than it would be to say gold?
It's cheaper.
Well, yeah, obviously.
That's the basic premise. Is that, you know, the reason I work with silver is largely speaking, it's just, you know, on a cost basis, it's easy to sell. You know, if you do something wrong and you make, you know, you do it wrong in gold, you've lost a lot of money, sort of thing. So, you know, maybe I'll get starting to gold, you know, working with gold at some point. But at the moment, it's just, you know, the price points that I'm at, I prefer to stick with silver and, you know, and sell things all the time rather than worrying about, you know, making something that's going to sit. I don't really want to make too many things that are just going to sit there, you know, and not sell. I'd rather, you know, I'm not into, you know, set high top end jewelry. I want to get stuff out. You know, it's the materials that are more important to me. You know, the fossils and meteorites are more important than actually, you know, making a massive amount of money out of it.
Well, I know people that think silver looks better than gold. I mean, I really do, as far as jewelry's concerned.
Yeah, it goes with more things. I mean, this thing, color-wise, I mean, you know, some things might clash, you know, if they were set against the gold, whereas, you know, with the silver, it's a pretty inert color sort of thing. So, it kind of goes with more things. So, you know, and it's just so much easier to work with.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find doing everything in this day and age, and this is normal, like I said, this is normally a question we have for musicians. excuse me. Do you find that doing everything in the digital age, you know, via online through social media and everything else, has been a blessing or a curse?
Oh, it's a blessing because I don't have to make money to support a shop. You know, I don't have to go to a shop every day. I mean, the reason why I'm doing what I am is really so I can, you know, I can work, I can get my kids, I can work, and then I can pick my kids up from school. And then, you know, it's just so much more convenient. I mean, everything can go, I can work when I want to work. If I don't, you know, if I'm not able to work, then I can just, you know, I don't have to open up a shop every day from 9 till 5. So I couldn't, you know, that sounds more like a proper job to me. And I didn't start the business to be a proper job. I started it to, you know, to make some money and, you know, have a lifestyle that I want. And it's absolutely perfect. So that's the internet, you know, it's people find it, they find you. They want it, they buy it. If they don't want it, fine. You know, you just find your market. I mean, you know, over the years, I never knew. I didn't know from the start whether it would work. I just started making things just for a hobby. I mean, it was never a job originally. I just started making, you know, a few bits and bobs with things that I liked, and then, you know, tried selling them. It wasn't even full time when I first started doing it. And it just evolved, and, you know, it's great.
Nice. I mean, because normally, like, you know, like I said, we usually ask that question to musicians. And the reason being is because of, you know, piracy, things like that. But you're in a position where you have an actual physical product. So it's hard, you know, it's pretty much impossible to duplicate.
I mean, that is what I make, sort of thing. So it is unique. I mean, you know, there are a few issues when people have tried to make versions of, you know, my work, sort of thing. But, you know, you just have to deal with that and move on, shall we say.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know what I would really like to see you do? I haven't seen this on your website, so I don't know if you make this or not, but I'm into watches.
Right.
Like, I love wristwatches, or, you know, pocket watches too. Have you ever thought about that?
I haven't, to be honest. No, I mean, it's a possibility, or, you know, or at least sort of working with maybe a watchmaker or something. I know there are quite a few, you know, watchmakers that do use like slices of iron and meteorite and things as the face. I mean, you can get them. As I say, I don't make them, but, you know, it's an idea maybe for the future, you know, to work with someone, or, you know, you could maybe set an ammo, a cut piece of ammonite in as the face of a watch. It's perfectly doable. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd make some decent you know, sales on that, man. It'd be I think, like I said, that's my thing. I mean, I collect watches. So I think, you know, I would love something like that. So
everyone's got an obsession, haven't they? Everyone's, you know, that's what, you know, what's fascinating about the world is everyone's obsessed with something. And, you know, there's so many different things people can get intrigued by. Sorry about it.
Oh, no, that's okay. So what do you have coming up? You're talking about your pieces going into a museum. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a local museum in Salford Museum where they're, you know, the my jewelry is going to be going in. I mean, in a way, it's the, you know, the museum is the obvious home sort of thing. So it's the one place that I'm kind of looking to, you know, get involved in more and more, really, because it's obviously the museum is a natural home for my work. So, you know, so I'm looking to, you know, get more and more into, you know, galleries and museum shops, because it's, you know, they're inspiring places, and, you know, it links in with what I do. So that's, you know, that's coming up at the moment. They're taking some pieces, and I'm looking to go, you know, expand it into more places. I mean, traditional shops and galleries are good as well, but, you know, sometimes they're a little bit, you know, they want set traditional type jewelry. That's not really what I want to do. So I do want to get into, you know, more interesting. I mean, I've already sold quite a lot of, you know, in some, there was a space museum in the USA. I sold a big order to a while, you know, quite a few years ago in San Diego. That went really well. And, you know, there's places like that that are more fun to get into because, you know, they've already got a theme. So you're working with them, something.
Nice. Well, you know, have you tried Science and Industry Museum in Chicago?
No. No.
Oh, you should try that. I think they would love some of your stuff, because they have a prehistoric area, and then they also have a space museum all in one building.
Right. I'll get in touch. Thank you.
Yeah. You should check that out.
Super. Thanks.
So, and they actually have moon and meteor rocks there, and they have rocks from Mars as well. So.
Right. There you go then. Right. I'll get on and get a ka-ching out of them.
Mm-hmm. Actually, but, I mean, it's one of the, I think it's one of the biggest science museums in the world. It also houses different industries, like in the space side, they have, I think the actual Apollo 12 capsule there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so, I mean, they've got, you know, it's a pretty big setup. I think you'd do really good there.
Right, thanks. Okay.
So, no problem. But I think you'd also do good in art museums too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's the Manchester Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it just takes time. As I say, I mean, there isn't time, you know, to get everywhere all at the same time. That's why I like it. I mean, it's, I like just, you know, growing organically, and sales just grow and grow. And I mean, you know, everything's going, you know, everything gets better by the day, so it's good.
And you make it, and you still make everything yourself, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the fun of it, really. I mean, they, you know, you get so many offers from, you know, there's companies in India and wherever that can just knock out things for you, and they probably would do it cheaply, but it's just not really, it's not really what I want to do. You know, I don't, it's not a matter of numbers. It's not always a matter of making, you know, making a fortune from bulk numbers. It's not really the point. So yeah, so I like to make it, and it, you know, it gives it some, it gives it interest, and people contact me and they know, you know, they know where it's come from. I think that's much more important, really, than just, you know, having something made by somebody anonymous that just, you know, comes from somewhere and just sits in a box. It's not really much fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you want something that's treasured for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
Because the jewelry that you're making too, I mean, everything I've seen looks like pieces that you would pass down to your children.
I hope so.
You know, Well, I mean, because they're made from your hands, from someone's hands.
Yeah.
So it's not a mold. You know, it's a person that took time to make it. I mean,
and the materials themselves have a history. And that's part, you know, that's basically the crux of, you know, the point of it is that everything, you know, these are million, you know, these are creatures from, you know, or there's material from space, or these are creatures that have been around for millions of years. You know, there's everything, the material itself has got a story, not just, you know, I try and make it into something beautiful as well as having a story. So
it's from our universe.
Yeah, no, that's
the magic. Exactly. Now, is there a substance or a fossil or anything else that you would love to get your hands on that you haven't yet?
I don't know. I mean, I can pretty much get a hold of everything I need. I mean, there's certain meteorites that I'd love to work with. I mean, there's a meteorite called a palisite, which is it's the most amazing material. It's basically a mixture of iron and crystal. It's kind of formed from an exploding planet. It's like the layer between the liquid and the metal. I mean, if you Google the word palisite, you can see the material and you see it. It's the most amazing stuff. That's, you know, I'd like to do some work with that sometime. The one problem with that is it tends to rust unless you get the really, really good quality material, because it's, you know, it's, well, as soon as it hits the our damp earth environment, especially in the UK, you can get problems with rusting. I mean, a lot of people collect it in the USA and it tends to be dry, you know, in drier places it's easy to keep, but we're a bit soggy over here, so it does rust quite a lot. So
it's something you'd have to maintain if you kept it.
Yeah, I mean, it can be used as jewelry, but you would need to, you know, you would need to certainly keep it dry, and you'd really need to use the best, you know, the best types of it. So you would be sure there's certain types that are pretty much, you know, sure from rusting. There's Esquire, which is the best quality type, but it's also the most expensive. So it's, you know, it's not cheap material, but that's something I would like to make some pieces with.
Nice. Now, where can we find you online?
Well, the easiest way is just to Google the words Jurassic Jewelry. So Jurassic as in Jurassic Park and Jewelry, and I'll come up there. Or just my name and Jewelry, Ian Barrett and Jewelry. I've got an Etsy shop as well. So if you just put my name in and Jewelry, or easiest way is just Jurassic Jewelry.
And you're on Facebook and all that.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook everywhere.